You can subscribe to The Spectator for 12 weeks for only £12 for our print and online editions, plus get 6 months of digital access free to The Telegraph. Go to spectator.co.uk/telegraph.
Hello and welcome to Coffeehouse Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Bulls and I'm joined by James Forsyth and The Spectator's economics correspondent, Kate Andrews. Today we've had an update from the Chancellor. Just a few weeks after revealing his winter economic package, Rishi Sunak returned to the Commons Chamber to announce a few tweaks. Kate, talk us through what the Chancellor announced.
So the updates to the job support scheme, which comes in on the 1st of November to replace the furlough scheme and will last for 6 months, make it far more generous. Now, the principle is the same, that you have to be an employee who's going to work to access the subsidies. But originally, the scheme was going to try to put the majority of the financial burden onto the employer, with the government only paying 22% of an employee's wages, up to 77%. Now, for employees who are only doing the bare minimum, which has gone down to 1 day working a week, the government will be paying over 50%. So in some ways, it's quite similar. But in others, the government's going to be paying a lot more than originally anticipated. Now, this is important because it implies that these restrictions that they've brought in Tier 2 and Tier 3 are not for a matter of weeks. They're probably for many months. You could even be looking into the spring before you see some of these restrictions relaxed. And that is a huge imposition on business. There's no support scheme that's going to get every business through the entire winter season. And as well, it reminds us that from a socializing perspective, you know, we may not be indoors this winter with our friends and family.
James, this is a change of tack from the Chancellor. Is this a U-turn?
So his argument is essentially the circumstances have changed, so the policy needs to change. He argues that when he came up with the first version of the scheme, the sense was that the economy was beginning to reopen, but restrictions were not in place. These restrictions have now come in place and have put otherwise viable businesses into real trouble. I think what you see here is the debate about the balance between the economy and public health. And because these public health restrictions have come in, kind of more economic support is needed. You can't allow kind of market forces to work in a way because it is an abnormal situation. You know, I think it is a valid argument that because you can't mix with anyone outside your household, restaurants that normally are, for example, to sound beyond North London parody, I was quite struck that Ottolenghi today, a very fashionable restaurant in Islington, was saying that it's down at like 10% occupancy. That is a very unusual fact. It's a kind of, it is a place that normally if you walk past it, there is a queue outside. Now, I realise this is beyond a parody of North London life to be discussing the fate of Ottolenghi. But
have you stopped going to Ottolenghi since I went to
Tier 2? I have only ever gone to Ottolenghi once in my life. It is very nice, though. I would recommend it for a special occasion.
I've never been.
You don't live in North London?
I don't.
It is expensive, but very nice. And so I think the point in a way is, how do you discern which of these businesses are viable and which not? And then I think the other question, which I think is a more difficult question, is which the press conference that Patrick Vallance, Boris Johnson, Rishi Sunak had, which we were all just watching, touched on, is at what point do we get back to normal? Now, I think we would all be quite disappointed if come next May, June, you weren't allowed to have a meal out with someone from outside your household indoors. I think that would be regarded as a kind of big failure. But there is a spectrum here. Right. So, for example, how long do we think it is until, for example, conference events that take place at the QE2 Centre outside or opposite our office, where you've got, you know, very large numbers of people in a small, confined indoor space, how long until they get back up and running? Because if you've got Chris Whitty, the Chief Medical Officer, talked about being better prepared next winter, is that the kind of restriction that might be in place? I think this is what's difficult, is working out in the current circumstances what are temporary changes because of the rules and what are lasting medium-term changes, because there's not going to be a kind of sleeping beauty moment when society and the economy rises back up as before, but you have this gradual process because nothing solves every problem. Some businesses are struggle to kind of get going again. So I think this is the difficult line that everyone is trying to walk.
Kate, let's talk about these measures in terms of how you can access them, because some of them appear to be retrospective. So what can be accessed retrospectively? And do you think this is a bung from the Chancellor to those areas in the north that have been under restrictions for some time to little avail in terms of immediate relief?
I think it's certainly an attempt to repair some of the damage that was done earlier in the week when you had this clear standoff between the Greater Manchester Mayor Andy Burnham and Number 10. And regardless of the details of that, I think politically speaking, and certainly from a media perspective, Andy Burnham was quite clearly the winner in making it seem anyway that the Tories weren't supporting the North in the way that they might support, say, the Southeast if it went into more restriction. It's notable that the changes today affect everyone. They're for everybody in any tier. I suspect that's because they will put more regions into higher tiers. More restrictions are coming. But I think the retrospective point is interesting. It is an acknowledgement that tier two, where households can't mix indoors, is in some ways as damaging as tier three when sectors are actually told they have to shut, because in tier three, you get more financial support. In tier two, the attitude, and James was alluding to this, was, well, it's not legal to socialize inside, but businesses, you might as well remain open because people still might pop by. They're clearly not popping by. They're fighting over the tables that are outside, sitting in the cold for 45 minutes and leaving. And because of it, many businesses simply have fewer customers. So there is going to have to be acknowledgement that businesses aren't just struggling now, but were struggling before. And I just think one thing to pick up on based on what James was saying is, it would be a huge shame if by the time you got to next spring, you couldn't have a meal with somebody indoors. But it just shows to what extent the goalpost has shifted here. I mean, the idea that the big failure is if next summer we can't be back to where we were this summer is not how we were talking when the virus started. We were told that by Christmas we potentially could be hugging our loved ones, seeing friends and family, and it is a stark reminder about how far away
returning to normal is. And James, when we're talking about returning to normal, what do you think the government strategy is here? Do you think that ultimately these measures that we heard today are in place until there is a vaccine? Is that the thinking across government?
So Matt Hancock said in the comments over, he's becoming kind of ever more confident in science's ability to kind of solve this crisis. And he and Boris Johnson both talked of a cavalry arriving in March. Now, I think they have two different cavalry units in mind. Matt Hancock's cavalry unit is a vaccine. Boris Johnson's is mass testing, essentially. The idea you have some kind of instant test that you don't need to send to a lab and that you can take it. And as Boris Johnson puts it, it then becomes your kind of ticket to ride. You can go off and go to the theatre or go out for a meal because you all go to work, perhaps most importantly, because you know you don't have the virus. Now, I think the question is this, is we've had lots of scientific hopes in this process, but they tend, because scientists are trying to do something remarkably difficult and often something that hasn't been done before, they tend to take longer to get there than people expect. And so those deadlines keep moving to the right. I mean, this is the challenge here is, I think the mildly optimistic, realistic take on a vaccine is you might get a vaccine next spring, but it will be patchy. It's not going to be effective on everybody. And it's not going to remove the need for any kind of other measures to deal with the virus. And then I think on mass testing, the question is, scale and reliability. I know that some people in the medical community point out on this idea of mass testing, we haven't managed to come up with kind of instant tests for lots of diseases that we'd love to come up with an instant test for. We've been trying to do that for ages and not succeeded. So, but I think that the question is this, is it's worth remembering that when the idea of local lockdowns and the South Korean strategy first came in, the idea was, I don't think people envisaged, or certainly not in the way it was described to people, I don't think they envisaged the whole of Greater Manchester being a local restriction. I think it was, the idea would be, it'd be much more targeted, and the test and trace would enable you to stay on top of the virus. I thought it was quite interesting today that Boris Johnson admitted that test and trace needs to do better. He's normally very protective of it, suggesting that any criticism of it is a kind of criticism of the people who work for NHS test and trace. And Patrick Vallance admitted that on the current numbers, its effectiveness is diminishing. And I think the question is this, which is there is a sense that when the infection levels are as high as they are, test and trace really struggles. And this is not a uniquely British problem. You saw it in Ireland, where they've had a real testing, tracing issue in the last few days because of the cases going up. But I think what it shows is the idea of relying on one thing to solve the problem, monocausal solutions tend not to work with this virus. I think it is going to carry on being a whole variety of things. And I think that makes the point of normality quite far away in that what is the moment when the government will feel confident lifting kind of all restrictions, the whole gamut of restrictions here. I mean, I think the kind of last possible thing to open will be nightclubs, right? And what is the moment at which the government feel confident saying, right, people can go back to sweaty nightclubs?
Particularly when no one seems to think any of these things are potentially a silver bullet anymore. Thank you, James. Thank you, Kate. And thank you for listening.